My name is Steve Elzing. I'm here with Henry Reinga, and we want to talk about coaching tips we learned from Rich DeVos. And Henry, maybe you could just say a little, why are we even talking about Rich DeVos, and how did we get connected to him?
Well, back in the 90s, early 90s, Steve and I connected planting churches.
Yep.
And some of the inspiration back then is, how do you get ordinary people, volunteers, bivocational, career people, have that reproducible, that was a big word, be more like the Apostle Paul were big words. And so one of the churches that I was part of planting was in Colorado Springs, and an Amway distributor tried to get me into Amway.
Right.
Now, some people don't like that, but right. For me, I was impressed. I was impressed especially because I saw that bivocational inspiration. Here he was working for the U.S. government, the military, and he was in Amway. And he was talking about how he has these two sources of income and a big dream and all these other things like that. And then I know we talked on the phone, and I said, oh, then wouldn't it be neat if the founder of Amway could be our mentor? And we knew he was from West Michigan. We went to Calvin Seminary.
So you're talking Amway, the big company.
The big company, Amway. You know, like some people say, well, Amway, and I was impressed because they knew how to reproduce leaders.
Yeah.
So we talked, so I faxed to the corporate headquarters in Ada, Michigan, a request that Rich DeVos become my mentor, and immediately your mentor together, because I knew this was our journey, how to get reproducible Christianity, more leaders mobilized. And amazingly, in 24 hours, he sent me back a fax, because back fax machines were all over back then. His corporate secretary said, yes, he'll mentor you, and here are his phone numbers, and here are his car phone numbers, and it wasn't long when he invites us to go to the Orlando Magic basketball game to, you know, start these mentoring.
Which, by the way, I have a picture of here.
You do?
Yeah, here.
Oh, well, yeah. Look at this. Okay, so on the far...
Yeah, who are these people?
There's Rich DeVos. This is, you know, early 90s. And there's you, who, by the way, you now look like your son, Mike, in my mind as I see that. There's Anthony Hardaway, who was a big star back in those days. And, of course, there's me with those glasses. But, you know, it became so clear to me in those places that Rich DeVos was a master coach. And we called it mentorship, but he was all about, you know, what's your dream, what's your goal.
Yeah.
Do you remember that first time we met him?
Yeah.
I think it was before this game.
Yeah.
This was really when the mentorship began, the coaching relationship began.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he just was like,
right,
you know.
And why were we attracted to Amway anyway? At all. I mean, we actually became distributors.
Yeah, we did.
We started going to some of the meetings and so on. And what about those impressed us?
What we were impressed about is that it was about leadership training. Yeah. It was about mobilizing people to get their dreams, to solve their problems. Some of them financial, ruin. They wanted to have, you know, more money just to support their families. And but other things, it was just all about leadership, and we love that.
And I remember, too, we had both done the Build It and They Will Come model of
in
church
planting, yeah.
Which is, you know, you build a nice church, you have great sermons, you have great music, and then you attract people. And it's sort of like having a great store and putting in greeters and having the lights just right, and people love your store and they come to your store.
Yeah.
And it was burning us out, and it sort of worked, but it was dependent on us always making it better and cooler. And then we saw, I think, with the Amway world, where instead of building one big store, every person was a store owner.
Yeah.
Every person. So we thought, shouldn't people own their own faith?
Yeah.
Shouldn't every person, every home be a light of Christianity to their community, rather than having to come to the church? You know, like the church is the big light. No, you're the big light.
Yeah,
you own this. And we saw ordinary people owning the whole thing, and doing things that they wouldn't otherwise do. You know, talking to you, for example. Yeah. Here's a guy working for the government, and he ends up talking to you. He probably wouldn't have done that without a culture of that. And we thought, this is what the church said.
Evangelism. You know, share with your neighbors. Yeah. Get out there. Reproduce your faith.
Whereas I had people that would be like, you know, I have this neighbor who I think needs Christianity. Could you go visit them?
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like, you're the pastor. You go visit them. And I'm like, well, why shouldn't you visit them? And so we started learning that, and then, you know, Rich could see that we were kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think he got excited about sharing his stuff in a more spiritual manner.
Well, I think he liked was, instead of being program-driven, we wanted to be reproducible, people-driven.
Right.
You know, and he saw that for Christianity, in fact, I remember how you used to talk about it. Wasn't early Christianity all about a grassroots movement of leaders? And I remember a paper you wrote to him, and he loved what you wrote. And it was a paper how you took the things we were learning from him, from our Amway experience, you applied it to this whole several page thesis, and I don't even know if you still have that.
I do. Similar.
Do you really? Oh, we should find that, and I'd love to see that now after, you know, 20-some years. But it was so interesting that I remember him talking to me on the phone, said he loved what Steve wrote, and I don't know if he ever talked to you about that.
He actually called me on Christmas Eve.
You got to be kidding me.
Christmas Eve, and he talked to my wife because I was out running before our service. I was running in that day.
Okay.
And
well, look at you. Look how you look there.
Okay. So he called a half an hour later again.
Again?
Yeah.
Right.
So it was like, you know, I don't know why he didn't have things to do on Christmas Eve, but...
Right.
Anyway, he was excited for both of us.
Yeah, he called me. I was in Colorado at that time, and he was excited. Or it may have been Oregon, I'm not sure, but he called me, and I said Steve wrote that.
Yeah,
he says, really?
Yeah.
So, that's neat.
He actually called you.
Yeah, he did.
That's so cool. So we sort of compiled, there's probably many more things, but we compiled like 17 tips. Because, you know, reflecting back as we've gotten to this whole coaching thing, we reflected back on that. And really, a lot of what we learned about coaching, we got from Rich DeVos. He was a coach before this thing was a popular thing.
Before
I think his whole style
popular,
is very coaching. Or he wanted to help people become the best person that they could be. And it was their dream, not his dream for them. And that's just how he operated.
Yeah.
And so we sort of reflected back on that and came up with a few tips that we got from him that I think will help many of you as well.
You know, in a very fundamental way, the mentorship of Rich DeVos and really being our master coach is the inspiration for why we are going into the life coaching minister whole process here.
Because why we know it works.
It
worked with us. It's worked with the people that we've tried to help.
Yes.
In some ways, the whole thing of CLI is coming out of that.
Yes.
You know, how do we help people become called ministers in their own situation?
Yes. The connections came out of that.
Right.
You know, all your personal life, your marriage, your family, small group church, all those things.
So, all right, let's get to it, Aaron.
Okay.
All right, number one, treat every person as someone who matters to God. John 3:16, God so loved the world, that's every person, that he gave his one and only son.
Yeah. We saw that, didn't we? I mean, whether it was at a magic game, he would talk to an elevator attendant.
Right. And I remember that, where that person, you know, because we were with him, we were all with the VIPs. We went up the back elevator that only is known by the VIP people.
Yeah.
And we were part of that entourage. And all of a sudden he stops.
Yeah.
And this person is showing pictures of her newest grandchild. Yeah. And he's just taking his time, listening and asking questions. And all of us important people are just standing there waiting.
Right.
And it was so impressive that he treated this person like she mattered.
Right, and he asked her about her own dreams, her own goals, and get her to own her life.
Right. And it was so genuine.
Oh, yeah.
And that is, as a coach, you need to have that genuine care for the people you're trying to help, that you really genuinely care for these people. They're not just a means to some end.
Right, exactly.
All right, number two, believe in every person as a child of God with undiscovered possibilities. John 15:5, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. So I think Rich had this sense that people can bear fruit. I mean, that possibilities are endless, and that you can't judge a person by what they look like or the education that they've had or their background or what they've done in the past. That if you give people, average people, an opportunity, who knows what they... Now, some people give it an opportunity and they don't do anything.
Right. But I remember one thing he would say is, just never pre-qualify people. Let them show who they are. You know, don't judge them ahead of time.
Right.
Don't limit their potential. And in fact, his attitude was, everyone has it.
Right.
But let them prove they don't have it.
Right.
Don't make that assumption for them.
Or there might be circumstances in their life that are holding them back now or in the past, but now things are different. Or now with coaching,
everything. Who knows what can happen?
Right.
But the attitude was always, they're children of God with so much potential.
Right. That God has this person on this planet for a reason.
Right.
And as a coach, you might be the one that can help unlock it.
That's really awesome. Yeah. Think about that.
Yep.
That is really neat. Somebody's stuck, and you get to be part of unlocking their potential before the sight of God and others. It's pretty cool.
All right. Number three.
Not going.
Number three, be positive with people, and they will be more positive.
That's the truth.
And he was. He was an incredibly up, positive person. He saw all the potential and the possibilities rather than always dwelling on the negative.
Yeah. I always remember how he said, if you look at someone and says, are you sick?
Yeah.
Okay. And then all of a sudden, you feel sick.
Yeah,
he told that story many times, like how, you know, you come to someone, even if they don't look healthy totally, let's say they're having a bad day, don't point out their bad day.
Right. Find some positive thing.
Right.
And they will respond positively.
Yeah, it might change them.
Right. Yeah. And so that's coaching. Coaching is seeing the potential, seeing the positive in someone. That's what we want to accent on. You know, maybe there's a lot of negative things going on, but if you can find the one positive, that becomes a building block for good things.
I like what the Apostle Paul said. You know, whatever is good, whatever is noble, whatever is praiseworthy, think about such things.
Right.
That's pretty
good. Whereas a lot of times we always concentrate on the negative. All right, number four, honor doers, people who try.
Yeah.
And the passage that I chose, this is Elijah. Elijah has this bout of depression where he, you know, he does the Mount Carmel thing and it's like a big, huge success. But then he fears for his life and he runs and he doesn't eat and he's tired and he goes to the mountain of God and God shows up and he complains, you know, God, I'm the only prophet left.
Right.
Now they're trying to kill me. Nothing is working. Your plan isn't working. My role in it is not working.
Right.
And then God does not deal with any of his complaints.
Right.
When God finally speaks in a small voice, this is what he says. And the Lord said to him, go back the way you came. And go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael, king over Aram. And also anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel. And anoint Elisha, son. So, in other words, he doesn't deal with the complaining. He doesn't say, you know, I understand how you feel. And God just says, all right, we got stuff to do, and this is what I want you to do.
Yeah.
And so, and Rich would do that. He would honor doing.
Yeah. Oh, one of my last conversations with Rich, late in his life, talking on the phone right around Christmas, 2018, he said, "You know, you guys are doers." I go, you're doers. That's what the kingdom needs, doers, who just try. And you may fail.
Right.
But do it.
Right.
Don't hold back.
Right. It's hard to drive a parked car.
Right.
If it's moving, you have a shot at actually turning the wheel.
Right. I mean, think about what has stymied you in the past. And when you actually got out of the funk and started moving.
Right.
And maybe it didn't go great at first, but there was something happening.
Yeah, there's some energy there.
And the Holy Spirit starts opening right. new doors.
Right. Or at least the Holy Spirit can say, okay, that's the wrong direction, go in this direction.
Yeah, right.
So coaching, really, bottom line, is about trying to get someone to do something.
Right.
Because people, I mean, there's the talking, trying to understand.
Right.
But eventually things don't change unless your client does something. So that's right. why we continually say, you have to move towards some kind of action.
You know, a lot of counseling, pastoral counseling, sometimes gets stymied because somebody comes and they want you to listen to their story, and you will as a minister. And I've had it where, especially young in my ministry, where people would come. And right around the time when this mentorship started, I started transforming even in my own ministry, where people would come and I had more of a doing. So, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
Now, I found it was interesting is no longer did I have these long, ongoing counseling relationships that never went anywhere.
Right.
But because those who did something didn't need me.
Right.
Those who would not want to do anything did not want to see me anymore.
Right.
It was like, wow.
Right.
It was
no one wants to keep hearing, well, what did you do? And, well, I did nothing. Well, what did you do?
I did nothing.
So they drop out. You're right.
That was all a direct relationship of his life coaching, life minister coaching to me back in the 1990s.
All right, number five. Never underestimate the potential of anyone. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through him who gives me strength.
Right. It's kind of similar to don't pre-qualify anyone.
Yeah.
But it's different in that it actually sees in people more than maybe our prejudice would already limit out of them.
Right. Yeah. In some ways, the average person limits them. Rich always said stuff like that.
Yeah,
that people have disqualified themselves from whatever opportunity.
Yeah.
That people are doing that.
Yeah,
but then as a coach or as a mentor, we sometimes do the same thing to the person we're trying to help.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be able to do this, so I'm not even going to try.
You're not smart enough. This person doesn't have an education. Right.
Right.
And then we have systems around us that constantly pre-qualify, but disqualify people.
Right.
To all sorts of
things. Yeah, you don't have this, or you don't have the right background, or you don't have the right family.
You live in this area.
Yeah. You don't make enough money, all those things.
I remember growing up as the son of a factory worker and mechanic, and I felt at times like disqualified in things I wanted to do. You're going to college, or you're going to get training, or, you know, you were not much of a reader growing up.
Yeah.
You know, all these internal voices that I talked to myself that way, but Rich did not think that way.
No.
And life coaches don't either.
Right. So it's always seeing the potential. Not what is, the potential.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, number six. If you help enough people get what they want, you will get what you want.
It's interesting. And really, this is the essence of the word diakonos, deacon. It's really, if to be great, you must be the least.
Right. In some ways, every business only succeeds if it meets the needs of others.
Right.
Right. I mean,
if
you have a product and no one wants it,
if
it doesn't help anybody, your business isn't going to last.
Right.
But I think, you know, for myself, when Rich said it this way, is because I think a lot of times it's easy to think, okay, how do I get what I want?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of the motivation. Yeah. How do I get the job I want? How do I get enough money that I want? How do I get the right spouse? How do I...
Right.
But for him saying it this way, it was like, okay, I'm not going to get what I want if I keep doing this.
Right.
I'm not going to get the spouse that I want if that's what I'm thinking about.
Right.
How can I be a great person to this girl and maybe she'll want me?
Right.
You know, it helped me turn things around that you're not going to get what you want, that the good things in life that come to you are really a byproduct of what you do for others.
Yeah, and reflecting on that deacon thing, similar to Rich DeVos thing, so when Jesus said, if you want to be great, because the disciples were figuring out who's going to be the greatest, okay? Now, what Jesus says is something that feels into their self-interest. You know, if you want to be great, and they're going, yeah. We want to make an impact. We want to make a difference. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. First Timothy talks about to be an overseer is a good thing. So we want to make an impact.
Right.
But then it's to help others.
Right. And in the end, you know, it seems counterintuitive, but when you help others, it boomerangs back to you.
Yeah. But you don't do it because if I do this, I'm going
to
get this.
You have to genuinely care about other people. You can't manipulate the situation. I'm going to be nice to you because ultimately I know that's going to be better for me.
And that's how the world does it.
Yeah. And people smell that.
They see it. Yeah, that's true.
All right, number 7. Make a stage for the other person.
Yeah.
So this is, in a way, similar. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we're looking for our stage. How can I be important? How can I be the first in line? How can I get the raise? How can I? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're in a company and you manage people, sometimes, I have all these people to help me succeed.
Right.
And then when there's a company event, how do I get the stage? And how do I have people help me take the stage?
Right.
Rich, you know, basically was telling us, you know, when you can give up the stage to others, it actually comes back better for you.
Yeah.
People will lift you up.
Yeah.
If you lift them up.
Yeah. And he was a master at that. And he was a master at it with our lives.
Right.
And then go do likewise.
Right.
And it is counterintuitive. What do you think about that, Steve? It's counterintuitive that helping others, a lot of times when people get a job, they want to be so indispensable they can't be fired.
Right.
So then what happens, they often get into a little silo here, and they don't even let anybody, even an intern, know the secret things they're doing, so they won't be let go. This says, let the intern know, encourage others, build everybody up. Does that really work?
Yeah, I think it does. While you're talking, I remember the first time we went to his house. And we were at his house, and we had just put together a discipleship kit.
Yeah.
Just like the Amway kit.
Yeah.
When you join Amway, you get a kit that helps you sell and what have you. And we put together a kit that had a serendipity Bible and prayer thing and tapes and helps and all these things.
Yeah.
And we came to his house and there was someone else visiting him.
Right.
And he, you know, and we were excitedly talking about our kit and we had it in the car. And he said, well, go get it. And he gave us a stage right there.
Right.
To sort of
give the plan. I think it was Adele and...
Howard
and Odell.
Dr. Howard.
Yeah.
And he gave us the stage in his house. This is his guest here.
Yeah.
But he gave the whole stage to us so we could present the whole thing. And it was really the first time we got to present it to him.
Right.
But he gave us the stage there where we could get excitedly sell the thing and, you know, try it out because we had just put it together. And that was such an encouraging. And then he bought 2 kits.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, good job, guys. I'm supporting you. I'm behind you. And with that kind of encouragement, you know, we've launched into the many things that we've launched into.
Exactly. All right. Number eight.
Reward what you want repeated. That whole recognition piece in the whole Amway business, trying to make a system where when you do something well, you get rewarded for it. Because and he told us stories of how so often in life the reward and good things come to those who manipulated it, or
right.
because of who you knew,
right.
or because of what you look like, or your connections. And he was like, I want a system where you do it. I don't care who you are.
Do.
I don't care
do.
How smart you are.
Yeah.
I don't care how connected you are. If you do it, you get rewarded.
Yeah. And what I felt, too, like, he pushed the word reward and blurred it into the word celebrate.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about that,
oh, okay.
too. But one of the things, I remember, I think I have this question, what do you want to do? I remember when we met at his house, we had just moved.
Right.
We had just moved to Chicago. We were going to start our own nonprofit, and we didn't have money. We
right.
had one business guy said, I'll let you be in my office, and
yeah.
so on and so forth. But we didn't have everything totally in order. And we were meeting with him, sort of the idea, hey, will you help us get our nonprofit going? But I remember when we walked into his house, and without all kinds of chit-chat and all these things, yeah. all right, what do you want?
I know, we were like,
just like, hold it.
Yeah. Just like a life coach does that, right?
Yes.
What do you want?
What do you want? What do you want? And that's right.
right.
That's what life coaching is. It's
right.
what do you really want? And getting to it. Because ultimately
right.
we can talk and talk and talk. But so he helped us like get to, and we had to right then, had to get right to it. What
right.
is it we really want? It forced us to figure out what we really wanted.
I said that was the essence of the life coaching relationship, because it started with that DNA.
Yes.
It did not start with the DNA, I'm just going to tell you what to do, I'm going to counsel you.
Right.
No, it was, what do you want? And let's get a plan.
Right.
And
yes.
let's talk about where this could go.
Yes. And not beat around the bush. And he said, then we can go have fun and go to the game.
Yes, I remember that. Well, this is actually, maybe we should quit
yeah,
here on
yeah.
this session, and then we'll continue on with what we learned from Rich in the next session.
All right.